Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley. I'm here with Freda Pinto, who is taking part in the Girl Rising film and movement here. Thanks so much for joining us, Freda.
Thank you so much. Thank
now, you. Before we get into, because I know it started as this movie about kind of all over the world, and you were narrating and all of that. Before we get into the Indian slice of it, talk about your experience with the actual Girl Rising, the thing that already exists, the more global one. How did you get involved in that?
Right, so I think Martha Adams, who's a creative director, and Richard E. Robbins, who is the director of the film, came to me much later after the film was done, and they asked me if I had voiced this really small but important part of the film, and it was a call to action. And they sent me a script, and I took it home, and I worked on it with my writer, Zoe Green. And I came back to them with kind of what they had sent me, but had flourished it a little more. And they were quite surprised. They were like, oh, we had no idea you would take so much time to actually fix it and work on it and make it your own. And I go, I think that is the whole point of it, especially when a cause like this is so important to you. And I think the thing that actually shocks everybody is that I hadn't even watched the film by this point in time, and I said yes to doing it. And I think the reason why I didn't have to watch the film at first is because when you hear passionate people speak about what they really want to achieve with a project, and when they've got like a great team behind them, you already know they're onto something really super.
Right. So you could sense it right away.
Absolutely, I could sense it right away. And then I watched the film at the Sundance Film Festival and supported them with a screening. And since then, I feel it was like it's been like a no turning back kind of a journey with them, where I just realized this is. I was already, and I am still working with Plan International. I'm one of their ambassadors for the Because I'm a Girl initiative. And I think when you bring the right teams together to kind of draw attention to a cause, you need to look at all aspects of it, the financial aspect of it, the political aspect of it, and one aspect which cannot be ignored is a creative aspect of it all, which is storytelling. And if you cannot get people to change behaviors and mindsets and attitudes, then it's almost going to be impossible for the political, financial, and the other sectors to make sense.
The hearts and minds argument.
Yeah. So it's very, very important. And I felt Girl Rising was lending itself to so much attitude, behavioral change, in terms of a campaign, that I felt I had to be part of it.
You said you jumped in and started making some changes to this. What
very
kind of
bossy,
stuff?
Very bossy.
Yeah. What are some of the bossy things? No, we're just joking. But well, you know, what sort of things did you feel like you were altering?
From my travels with Plan to countries like Ethiopia, Sierra Leone, Philippines, and India as well. I mean, not traveling in India, I was in India.
Right.
I felt like the one thing we needed to make sure that came across in something like a call to action was the actual voice of the girls. Sure. And it didn't seem or sound like we were talking at them, or that we were in any which way actually making them feel and sound like victims. Because really, they're survivors who just don't have the means and the resources that you and I have, and so I was making sure that they sounded like real fighters. It's always so much more inspirational when you support a fighter, right? Someone who knows, okay, I don't have all of this right now, but I could get it if you just gave me a little bit of support and
I'll
help.
I'll figure it out a way.
Exactly. So those were the changes, just making sure that it sounded like it was the voice of the girls and not me as Freda Pinto's support, just giving them my voice.
Right. Now, so this was that was your work on the big project, the original film that played at Sundance. Now, what's the idea with, now you're going to kind of slice it off and focus on the Indian portion, and you're going to make another one, right?
Right.
How do you take something big and then, you know, find your narrow slice?
Actually, you know what? How do you take something big and then put yourself in a bigger challenge?
How do I make this harder for myself?
So at Sundance, Holly Gordon, who's the president of Girl Rising and the exec producer, I walked up to her and I said, listen, this is all well and good. This is a great film. It's in English. But how do we make people across the world who don't speak the same language, who actually may not even relate to every story in this film, how do we make them come on board this Girl Rising campaign for change? And I said, do you fancy the idea of taking it to India and translating it into Hindi?
Yeah.
You know, and doing the exact same thing that you did with the Hollywood actors to do it with Bollywood actors.
Same concept, but with Bollywood.
Yeah, with Bollywood, because it is the biggest industry in India, and Hollywood does not figure when you think about how big Bollywood is. Holly said that was already part of their plans. Like, they already had this in mind.
Yeah.
Holly
said that. She didn't change her name to Bali, right?
No, she didn't. Oh, okay, she didn't. Not yet. She would have to now that this has become like a success in India.
I'm kidding. But yeah.
She worked with me along with another lovely lady, Lauren Mitty, who was part of the project back then. And six months later, they asked me if I'd actually produce the Indian version of this project.
Yeah.
I immediately said yes, because I'd already put in like 6 months of work trying to figure out what the strategy would be, meeting with the right partners, partners in the private sector as well. And so I just kind of felt this was it. You know, if I was going to do something for India, and this would be my big give back, especially because it's done so much for me and continues to do so much for me. So I felt like this would be, along with the work that I'm doing with Plan, in terms of what I know best, which is my talents, my creativity, I would channel it into storytelling for change.
Talk about sort of, you know, what obviously acting and all this, you know, but talk about what gets you up in the morning in terms of working on something like this versus shooting a fiction film, which is always fun, obviously, and you make a great living at it and you're great at it. But talk about how this is something, getting up in the morning and knowing you're working on this, is like a little more, rewarding.
It's interesting because someone asked me about 2 months ago, how much of your life is Girl Rising and how much of it is your films and your career? And I said, at this point in time, the lines have blurred and it's 50-50, you know? And it's kind of seeping into each other almost in a way, which is great, you know, because I need the films, I need that cachet in order for something like Girl Rising to also be popularized. Because we all know that when it comes to social change and subject matters that are a little more hard-hitting, people have a very tough life as is, you know, trying to just cope with the world and the changing times and technology and you know, the rising prices, for example. And so I feel like with all of that, you need to be able to give them something that is inspirational.
Right.
And in order to draw them to something that is inspirational, you need to have cachet.
Exactly.
So yes.
They go hand in hand. Yeah,
really. They go hand in hand. Yeah. So for me, it's kind of both ways. You know, as the better I do at work, the better I can be with Girl Rising. And the better I do with Girl Rising, the work just becomes even more rewarding.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of India itself, what specific challenges does India face, let's say, compared to for girls trying to rise in India as opposed to America, let's say?
I think the issues would be different. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be the exact same. And we are steeped in a little more of a little more cultural barrier situation than probably America is.
Right.
In terms of,
like, what sorts of things?
Like certain traditions, mm-hmm. and certain ideas that are very deep set,
right.
Female feticide. You know, it is it has been a growing problem in India, and believe it or not, a lot of people believe that this is a problem of the rural community, you know, of the community that is probably living at the poverty line or below.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's a big problem in urban cities as well, because they're the ones who have access to technology to basically, you know, to find out what the sex of the child is before he or she is born. So
they can even do that.
Sex selection is actually banned in India. You cannot find out the sex of your child before he or she is born. And that is one way of tackling it. The other way of tackling it, which is long term, is to give back value to the girl child and make communities, parents, teachers, government leaders, and basically the entire country at large value the girl even before giving them the idea of, you know, oh, by the way, you will not be able to determine the sex of the child,
right.
and carry out an abortion in case she's a girl.
Right.
So I feel that is probably one of our biggest challenges, and how we structure a campaign where it goes into every part of the society, not just rural but urban as well, to help them value and understand the value of a girl child and how actually important she is to the economy of the country and the GDP. And then maybe the other problems would be schooling, which is one of our focuses as well, wherein there are these traditional ideas in India that after the age of 15, 16, once the girl attains puberty at probably 13, her body is actually getting ready for marriage and pregnancy. And so it's very, very hard for families who have not seen the other side of it to believe that it is possible to let the girl be unmarried for as long as she wants to be, so that she can go out and do what she really wants in life, career-wise.
And that can actually be beneficial.
And that can be actually beneficial back to the family, because it's a proven fact that girls who work and earn money invest right back into their family. Then the biggest problem of it all would be poverty. Because there are fathers and parents in India who don't want their children, girls, to be married at the age of 13 and 18 or whatever the young age might be.
Yeah.
But the problem is that they have monetary issues. You know, they don't know how to help the child, girl child, complete the education. And in some cases, the dowry system also bogs them down quite a lot. So I feel this, it's kind of a web of very treacherous issues, but if we tackle it one by one, and also don't come in with the idea that, hey, we're going to save 1.2 billion or 1.3 billion people right now in India and tackle every problem. I think if we can start with one and do it effectively, then we've really achieved something.
Right, and then maybe it can domino from there.
Absolutely, it's always a domino effect. I think if giving back value to the girl child is a priority, because everything starts from there.
You're aware of the Malala story, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So we just, I guess it was just earlier this week, we interviewed Davis Guggenheim about, he directed the movie, Oscar-winning director, and he said that just through the experience, he's making this movie about the importance of, young girls' rights and childhood education, but then he went home and he's like, am I actually doing that in my own family? You know, if I have an important question, I sometimes ask my son what he thinks, but not necessarily his daughters. And he says, you know what, am I actually, practicing what I preach? And he kind of had a look in the mirror type moment, which I thought was very great and honest of him to say, So let's say a similar situation. Let's say there's a father in India and they watch what you guys are putting together. What sort of soul searching moment should they have in their own mirror, look in the mirror type thing, just in the home?
Really, we hope that our film, and in this case, Davis's film as well. I met Davis actually while he was filming the last part of the Malala documentary at the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony in Oslo last year.
Wow.
So we were at the same place, and I was presenting Malala on stage that year, so I was seeing all this magic happen.
Oh, you presented her at the?
Ceremony, at the concert.
Oh, okay. She's amazing.
She is absolutely amazing. So we really hope with stories like Hinemi Malala, with stories like Girl Rising, we hope that the takeaway, and this really is, Davis is already, he asks a very important question, but he's already done it in a way. Putting the right amount of creativity in it without sounding like you are chastising a group of people or that you are talking down at them and preaching and telling them how to do it. Finding a creative way of putting it out there, we hope will be enough to help open that first initial conversation about, am I doing the same question that Davis had? Am I doing enough for my own family in terms of giving back value to the girl child, making sure that her dreams come true, and making sure that she's free to do what he or she want, not just girl, in this case, child, I think I would say. So I feel like that itself is enough.
Because it all starts there in how people treat their individual family and
absolutely.
Their own daughters. Yeah.
Absolutely, and which is why we do start with families as well. I think it's all well and good to talk about educating the girl child, but what about educating parents who haven't had the opportunity to get a full and complete education? They might have, because they've missed out on such an important part of their own childhood, because back in the day no one thought that it was important for them to actually be educated, they might just end up continuing the same with their
passed
own children.
Down. Yeah, we become our parents, really.
And,
yeah.
And that becomes, and as much as you know this as well, I mean, we're walking into my 31st year now, very soon. And
hey,
I feel,
me too.
Yeah?
I'm on the 16th. When are you?
I'm on the 18th.
Really? Are you serious?
Whoa!
Yes. Well, happy almost early birthday. That's
happy
awesome.
Happy early birthday.
We're both
to
turning
you
31 like 2 days apart.
Yeah.
All right.
So
respect your elder by 2 days.
respect.
Yeah,
respect.
I'm just kidding.
I feel like as much as we say, I don't want to do that the way my mom did it. I don't want to be my dad. I don't want to be my mother. irrespective, you end up emulating their ways.
As much as we fight it.
So, yeah, exactly. So I feel it's so important for parents to also be part of this whole education conversation so that they can be great role models for their own children and vice versa. You know, children can be great role models for their parents.
No, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. How are we doing on time?
Yeah, I mean, we have a few other people, but, you know, enjoy.
Sure, sure. No, I mean, I think we've covered, I think, a good bit.
This is great. I feel it's so important to get why. I think the importance of this interview is just simply this. I am not doing anything that is rocket science. Right. You know, it is really, I'm basically stating the obvious over and over again. But the reason why we do it is because it seems like historically progress has only happened when people have repeated. You know, the art of repetition literally has led to success. And so that's the only reason why we go around saying this over and over again like a broken record, not because we want to bore people. It might get boring after a while. But
we just need to hammer it into their brains.
Yeah, and we just want people to wake up and go, you know, we're in 2015. The UN just launched a sustainable development goals with this hope of further reducing poverty by 2030, making sure that girls, all girls, 62 million girls are in school by the end of 2030. And that is not going to happen if we don't repeat this over and over again. You know, 15 years will just pass us by and I'll be 45 years old before I know it and still saying the same thing in case if people who are listening to this actually don't start helping out.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I know tomorrow there's a huge gala, but the woman I was talking to before said that there's a guy a cappella group that is coming with a bunch of gentlemen and someone like Davis or someone like myself. What is the role that we guys can play in this so that say that this is just a girl's, you know what I mean, just a girl's issue. Why is this this is an issue for all of us. Mm-hmm. Talk about the collectiveness of that.
I definitely think the issue is not a girl issue, which is why I also changed it to
human
child.
Issue,
it's a very human issue. Because what affects girls eventually will affect boys as well. If we believe, and I don't like saying this, but if the common belief is that girls are future mothers, you know, and I think girls should be allowed to choose whether they want to be future mothers or not. But if the common belief is that girls are future mothers, and the truth is most of them do turn to be future mothers, imagine the impact they will have or not have on their boys if they are not educated.
Exactly.
You know, imagine the kind of progress that we want to make towards, a growing economy in a country or towards, let's say, equal opportunity cannot happen if only women are fighting this fight. And it's kind of counterproductive.
Yeah.
Also, it is very polarizing.
Yeah.
You know, and which is why we hope Davis and Jason and and all these amazing Joe Biden. We need the vice president. We need all these amazing men to continue standing tall for us, encouraging other men. You know, I think it was at the global concert, citizen concert that happened in New York, when Vice President Joe Biden took the stage. There was an overwhelming response from men who also could see that this is not just a woman's fight, you know, because you had Beyonce on stage and you had the First Lady on stage and then you had other women like Kerry Washington and Olivia Wilde on stage.
Right.
And then you also had the men.
Yeah.
And I think that really makes a difference. The lack of good male role models can be very detrimental to this fight.
It's absolutely true. Yeah. It's absolutely true. And I'm glad we got that part in there because it's something that all of us have to be invested in. It's definitely not just gender specific. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So I think unless there's anything else you want to say, it's something totally off, you know, related, but while we have you here, I know Danny Boyle's new movie's coming out, Steve Jobs, it's kind of timely. Talk about what makes him so great, because he worked with him on Slumdog, obviously, but what's his biggest strength?
I think his biggest strength is fearlessness. I don't think that man fears anything when he makes a movie. He will go to any, and I think it's not easy. It's not easy to say, I will take this risk and take ownership for this risk that I'm taking as well.
Yeah.
And so he goes right into it. There is no fear of, oh, how are people going to take it? And I think that's how creativity can really be nurtured amongst, you know, young girls and boys as well. teach them to make a fearless decision, which is, if you want to do, go out and do, look at this. I'm like literally staring at this, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
If they want to believe that anything is possible, then they should be allowed.
It's the elephant in the room. You can't see it. There's an elephant on the thing.
Yes, that is true. The elephant in the sky, actually.
Yeah.
we're actually advertising for this brand, so I'm going to close this.
Yeah.
But I think, yes, I feel Danny has never had any apprehensions of taking on very, very controversial subject matters, or a subject matter that may not be very controversial, but giving it that very edgy route by just going into it and pushing himself over the cliff to see how far he can go.
Yeah. Well, you're demonstrating similar fearlessness here, so we appreciate
it. Well, we learn from the best. He was my first teacher, and his lessons will always be remembered.
He was your
first? He's my first teacher. First director.
Yeah. How did that, I guess it's the final question because we got to wrap it up, but how did that experience in Slumdog just totally change your life and allow you to do stuff like this now?
Well, the thing is, when I did Slumdog, I was completely clueless about what was happening. And I was just 22 years old. Someone just said that there's this film that, you know, you're going to audition for, and I didn't even know it was a Danny Boyle film.
Right.
And I go in there, and then within a matter of a year, my entire life had changed.
Yeah.
But then I had two things that I could do then. Either enjoy whatever was happening
as long as you can,
learn about everything that was happening in that point in time if I really wanted to strike while the iron's hot, and learn about what I can do and what I cannot do. And it's not like I came in with like the 100% confidence. You know, I had to build my confidence from there to be where I am today. And today I'm like super confident, which is why I feel every little experience on that first film will be the greatest, most fantastic learning experience. And every other film is important, but nothing will be compare what Slumdog did for me.
Yeah, well, it's opened up all these great possibilities.
Yes,
so we really
absolutely
appreciate you. Thanks so much for taking the time, Frida.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.